Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Napa know-how.
This month, Napa's got all kinds of motor oil deals that can save you some serious cash. Like a 5-quart jug of Napa Full Synthetic Motor Oil for just $16.49. With savings like that, you may start feeling like a VIP. But don't let it go to your head. These oil deals are for everyone. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
General States pricing. Sales prices not include applicable state local taxes or recycling fees. Offer ends 8/31/20.
That little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide. You already know what it is. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Subscribe today. Now, part of the things that we're doing over here at Negative to Positive is encouraging people to change their lives, change the things that are within their power. I want to thank our good friends at KFC for helping me bring this to you. Feed your whole crew with KFC. Let's go. I can get the KFC bucket of chicken, and you know, that's fire. Now, Babu, you know that you could get that mac and cheese, that mashed potato, gravy, those biscuits. Now, that's trouble right there. That is fire right there. You know, on Negative to Positive, we always talking about striving and achievement. And the Colonel Sanders story is a story that inspired me since I was 10 years old. Look how our life comes full circle. Now I'm talking about Colonel Sanders and Kentucky Fried Chicken and how much I love it. Listen to my new podcast, From Negative to Positive. Check out the vodcast. Subscribe today. Apple Podcast. Podcast One. Spotify.
Welcome, everybody, to another brand new episode of the Top 10 Show on camera. I am one of your hosts, John Rocha.
I am Matt Nost, and we are here to bring you another show for those lovely video watchers. I think we both played at the camera initially.
Yeah, we did.
When the show turns. Well, I think we do it every time. We're hams. There's a reason we do this.
Yeah, there are hams. Yeah, absolutely. And I enjoy being a ham with you and having fun and talking about all this stuff. And today we got another great show, another great topic to tackle.
Yes.
Based on the Ford versus Ferrari film that's coming out.
Which looks good.
Yes, it does look good. Unfortunately, tonight as we're recording this, I had to back out of a screening of it, so I'm sad about that. But since I'm not reviewing it, I can go with the masses and sit down with them and enjoy the film.
True.
With everybody else.
And, you know, you're also getting another trip coming up. There's reasons, scheduling and whatnot.
Yeah.
Just adjusted your schedule and be like, I can't see it tonight, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But you will be seeing it.
Just I hope so.
The same time I'll be seeing it. And more than likely, you know, damn near everybody else out there.
Yeah.
It does look good, though.
Yeah, it does.
When I heard it announced, I'm like, really? This? Okay. And then you see that first trailer, and be like, all right, I understand exactly what you're doing. It's drive. It's determination. It's
right.
Willpower.
Right.
It's can you overcome an almost insurmountable task from the jump? And they do it really well. I mean, when you have Damon and Bale, you know there's a certain level of professionalism.
Yeah.
They're both just always excellent. Even if I don't really like Downsizing, movie was okay.
Yeah. The one with Damon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. Same thing, Suburbicon. These were not films that he necessarily knocks him out of the park, right?
True.
So you wonder how bright is the star shining? Even that Jason Bourne movie was kind of not that well received. It might have been financially fine, but it wasn't that well received to the level that Bourne Ultimatum or Bourne Identity or Bourne whatever the other one was.
There was Bourne.
Yeah. Well, that's
just
the Jason Bourne was the last one.
The one that came in with Damon came back?
Right. That's what I'm talking about. That one didn't get received as positively
as the Renner one?
No. The first three, Bourne Identity, Bourne Ultimatum, and Bourne Supremacy. Those three are pretty much a great trilogy and put on the pantheon of trilogies. But Jason Bourne, the one that just came out a year or two ago, isn't quite as revered as those. So you wonder, where's Damon fit now? Where does he go? Where does he find his placement here? And you want him to do well, and certainly something here with Bale looks interesting and exciting. And I had a friend audition for this, and he said it was a great script. So I'm looking forward to it.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still churning out good work. The Martian wasn't that long ago.
No, Martian was good. Oh, is that a good point? 2015?
Yeah.
Martian was good. Yep. All right.
He's still got the chops. It's just he had a couple, and there was that one that was funded by the Chinese production company about the Great Wall,
the Dragon
or whatever.
Woof.
Coming in.
Woof, the Great Wall.
But you see that and you're like, that's an interesting move.
Yeah.
To really tap into that market. It's business.
Yeah.
You know, now you factor in certain release elements and aspects of the movie that suddenly shifts to Southeast Asia because there's another market that they want to open up.
Yeah.
Some do it artfully, some do not.
Good point.
So I still have belief. And then Bale's, you know, I couldn't tell you what he hasn't been good in and what I haven't enjoyed of his.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's kind of tough. So between the two of them, it's like, wow, this could really be something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, especially because it's cars. It's old school, like that time when you're into – like when cars are becoming a thing that people are super into. And competition, little guy against a big corporation. You know, I love that kind of stuff. So I'm excited to see it as well. We'll see. I'm looking forward to watching it at some point down the road. Anyway, how have you been? How are things?
I'm good. I'm tired at this point. But I think that's just life. So I don't know that it's anything specific. It's just – the constant grind.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, so it's one of those days where it's just like my brain is good to go, but it's a nice, like, even keel kind of pace type of thing.
Rolling through.
Yeah, at this point. It's a long day, and tomorrow's going to be a long day, and the day after that's going to be a long day.
Yeah, join the crowd, man. I just found out, like I said.
Just like you.
We were talking off the mic. I just found out I'm going to Australia again next week. So we have to record our episodes ahead of time for everything that's happening. So it's like all of a sudden out of nowhere, I'm going for 4 days to Australia to cover something I can't talk about yet. But like, yeah, it's like it doesn't end. One day something pops up, another thing pops up, blah, blah, blah. So it's the life. But it's better than sitting at home waiting around for something to happen. So I don't mind it on
100%.
That end. Yeah.
100%.
I think we got some good responses to our first show. I felt like we got some good responses.
Yeah, the number of people that were so excited that we were coming back on camera. Yeah. Now. We're just doing this, and it's just the two of us, and a bunch of new people joined up at patreon.com/the top 10 with the number 10. You get the video a week before when it drops on Collider.
Mm-hmm.
And
Let's make that very clear. For those of you who are listening to us on the audio, if you're like, why can't I see the video at the same time as the audio? It's because we're only giving that out to our patrons $10 and up the day it comes out. You guys get it. So if you want to get the videos the day of the show coming out, go and sign up at www.patreon.com/the top 10, the number 10 there. Pledge $10 and above to support us every month, and you will get the video day of. For everyone else, you have to wait a week to get it. So you do get double dose of goodness in that way, don't you, I think? You get like the double – you get the idea of watching us and hearing the next week's show at the same time. So you can get 4 hours of top 10 goodness on camera and on audio that way.
Oh, shit, if you join Patreon – and you got access to all the extra shows that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a shout out at the end of the month. And there's other things built in at that tier. So it's not just you're coming for the video.
Yeah.
We got other stuff, guys. Guys, we got a smorgasbord, cornucopia.
A cornucopia, one might say.
Of decisions and choices.
A shish kebab. A lot of things attached to that one poll. What else? What else you got? Nothing. What else you got?
My dad gave me some guff about me having Fletch. He just texted me. He was like, Fletch? And I'm like, look, it's only the second time it's ever come up. And it's my favorite movie.
I know.
And if I can squeeze it on this impossible list of 75 choices, then this is the perfect list where, you know what? I'm sorry. If we're going to allow – if my list is going to be 35 long and I have to cherry pick 10, like I said on that one, it's just like, okay, I only took one sub-movie because I had two sub-movies.
Yeah, and I
only took one of these because I had a bunch of this. Although you did point out that I had three straight Nazi movies at the bottom of the list. I hadn't realized that – JoJo was like the last edition. The last second, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this because I want people to see it.
Right.
But that was interesting. Hey, inadvertently.
There's a lot of books on the Nazis, so why wouldn't you?
There's tons.
And a lot of movies based on books about the Nazis.
I think I've seen way more movies than I've read books of that specific subject.
Me too. I've probably seen way more documentaries than I've ever read books or movies about the Nazis. That's for damn sure. I just have I like to watch those World War II things. And of course, inevitably, you're going to deal with the Nazis. So it's fun stuff.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to.
And what are you going to do? It's the main enemy of the friggin' war.
Well, you have one theater of the war. Well, we also shy away from because we were kind of racist and assholes.
Towards the Japanese. Yeah.
It was, look, they attacked first, so we had all the rights.
Right.
But
to be upset.
True.
Right.
But then to stoke the fires and whatnot, that's one we turn away from because it's bad.
Yeah.
So you don't see as many. There was Band of Brothers, and then it was like 4 years, and then we got the Pacific.
The Pacific wasn't as strong as Band of Brothers, right?
Not even close.
Yeah, I found myself – it was a bit of a grind to watch the Pacific, whereas Band of Brothers felt inspirational and like having been in the military. Of course, I didn't serve World War II regardless of what people think about my age. But I was excited to feel that vibe again in Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Pacific, it felt like this grind. And though maybe that's the point to make you feel what it was like in that theater of war. war that it seemed endless.
It was more psychological on some level.
Right, right. And sadder.
It's sitting out in the rain, and then the one dude snaps eventually. Like there was pots and pans or something around. And it just goes crazy. Yeah. I could totally see that because, you know, grand scale Chinese water torture.
Yeah.
The one where they just drip, but this is just constant. You're just always wet. And you probably got trench foot and some sort of, you know, Legionnaires disease all kinds of random things because nobody does this.
Yeah, exactly.
This only happens in very specific, you have to stand in mud for, you know, days on end.
Right.
Like, oh, God. Yeah. So the Pacific is tough. The only thing I really remember from it is Remy Malek. That was the first time I saw him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, this dude has something.
Right.
Like, he draws my eye every time, and he's not chewing the scenery. And then the main kid was was he the kid from Jurassic Park?
Yeah, Matarazzo.
Okay.
Right, right, right. But there was a lot of people. John Seda was in this thing, too.
Yeah, there was a ton of, ensemble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I still take
Barenthal.
Yes, John Barenthal. Right, right, right.
Was he on Midway?
Is he in that new Midway one?
No, I'm saying in the theater sequence of that, I think he was in the Midway.
Yes, yeah.
Because the other guy that he was with, actually, when you're driving down to San Diego, the street right before you get to the check mark, or two streets up, but I think it's the street right before, is named after the sergeant that came back and sold bonds after the war and all that stuff, but they talk about it in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Shoot, he's Italian. Dang it. All right, it'll come to me later.
Yeah.
But I think of that from the show, and I was like, oh, that's named after, because I lived in San Diego for, you know, 6-7 years.
Right, right, right.
Dang it, what was his name?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I guess I could open up a laptop and look.
Well, I do that. We're on camera.
I know. What's the fun in that? I wrote down. I've got my list right here. There you go, camera people.
That's right. Good to go.
Freeze frame that. You just saw a bunch of gibberish.
Matt had to help me this week. And it's the first time that's ever happened in the show. In 4 years of doing this damn show, Matt had – I'll be honest, pull the curtain behind. You know, Matt had to help me a little bit because – I got caught up in so many things, and it wasn't on the calendar, and I'm not used to us recording it during the day at work.
Yeah.
That now that we're on Collider, I didn't even plan for it. It didn't even occur to me in my head. I was too busy caught up in the laurels of the first episode that I didn't even think about the fact that we had to record a second episode. So it came fast upon me a week later. So it's the way life works sometimes. So,
well, our two calendars don't cross-pollinate for some reason.
Yeah.
Because I ran into it when I opened up and was like, I don't see any of all that input, you know, inputted information. And then eventually I found it. So I think there's a personal and then one associated with Collider.
Yeah.
I figured they would all bleed onto one because they both come up. I get notifications from both.
I get the topics.
Okay.
And I get the topic thunder and when all that's dropping. What happened was that what didn't get transferred over was the time of the recording. And so I got caught up. So Matt had to send me his like 2 pages of stuff. And then I picked from that and then also my own stuff that I had kind of thought about and put it. So the list is compiled. This is my honest list. So I got no negative things to say about that and their own list.
And so if there's an error, an omission on some level.
Please forgive me.
Yeah, it happens also with this back-to-back weeks where we choose a topic where there's a lot of choices.
Yeah.
How are you defining double build?
Yeah, for me it's double build that they were both known or at a certain stature and the film is good.
Okay.
This is what I factored into this whole making of my list.
Because I disqualified a couple of – technically I knew one and then the other one was part of my life type of thing.
Right.
But they're not – you know, it's not 1A, 1B.
Right, right.
Or they hadn't reached 1B status until the success of this movie.
Right.
And then that they have something after that, sure.
Yeah.
I know. It was tough. But eventually I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. If it's truly double billed, I knew the two names going into it.
Right.
Seeing it, it's like I was amped.
And even if it's an ensemble piece to me, if there's two names that really stuck out or stick out and are known, I put it on the list.
Yeah, it's got to be. Yeah. I mean, even if it's ensemble, but it's got to be about the two as best as we can get it.
We'll see.
We will see.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you did pull from a bunch of movies that I – so they make that definition to me fluidly on some level.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So they're all in contention.
On some level, there were some I was just like, no, you don't have a shot. But it's just kind of you write them down, at least I do, to just spark more thought.
Right, right.
I just type and I'm like, okay, what else? What else?
Yeah.
What am I not thinking about? And there's a, you know.
What am I not seeing here?
This is like a top, you know, 15, top 20 list.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, should we get into it?
Yeah, once we set a topic, we go our personal way, show back up here. I do my bottom three, he does his bottom three. I do my next two, he does his next two. Then we trade one apiece. Once we have revealed our personal top 10 list, we create the shows between the two of us.
Boom!
Jumping right in.
Let's do it.
10 for me, tough list. Like I said before, a lot of choices.
Yeah.
You know, fire away, people. The Nice Guys.
Oh, great choice.
I knew Crow, I knew Gotham.
Great choice. Yep. Absolutely.
So it's... It succeeded, and it was actually better than I was hoping it would be. A lot of charm between the two of them.
Yeah.
And the Gosling does some nice, you know, Abbott and Costello takes. Every once in a while, he sees that dead body type of that's you know, vaudevillian acting that you don't see anymore.
True. Very good point.
But it was so nice to see. It seemed like maybe he was concussed, and then he just doesn't know how to process, and why not? That's fun. It takes me back to all kinds of things I grew up watching as a kid.
His screaming is the best.
Yeah.
Whenever he has to do that high-pitched scream
yeah.
when he's in pain. I think that's very funny as well.
And, you know, Russell Crowe playing the more lived in. He's done the same job. He breaks the elbow the same way, the ulnar fracture, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
the
yeah,
little
yeah.
spiral fracture because he twists the arm. And between the two of them, you bring the daughter in for Gosling. And they have a great dynamic. And then she has a great dynamic with Russell Crowe as well.
Right.
And they go off in search of and show up at ridiculous Hollywood parties. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy the movie as well.
Yeah. It was better. I mean, I thought it was going to be like, this seems like it's going to be a solid B.
Right.
And it was better to me than just a solid B.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I mean, it's once again, it's Shane Black essentially going back to what he did really well with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Iron Man 3, some people are on the fence about it, like, don't like. That Predator film is terrible. But what he does best are these smaller, character-driven, pseudo-action pieces that are distinctive because of the uniqueness and eccentricities of the main characters, right? With Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, it was Val Kilmer playing this gay guy who, like, says the most inappropriate shit at certain moments, but funny as hell.
Yeah.
Downey Jr., who's just this desperate criminal who's just flying by the seat of his pants in every situation he's in. And then, of course, you have the great Michelle Monaghan being part of them as well. But then you roll into Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. You have Ryan Gosling being this private investigator that's kind of terrible at it, a shitty dad, so much so that the daughter really is running the relationship between them.
Yeah, without a doubt. She's taking over the mom. She's
She's essentially the mom. Yeah, the mom character in the situation. Right. Essentially, and then Russell Crowe with all the kind of abrasive nature of him. This is like Bud, whatever his name is, from L.A. Confidential, like 20 years later or something like that.
Kind of,
right?
Although he's a little more self-aware in this one than I think Bud could eventually get to.
You don't think Bud would get eventually to self-awareness?
I think he was just sarcasm. Straight bulldog.
Yes.
And Crow in this is bulldog with a brain.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, because he's so confident, man.
He is. And he's also thought through and he's been in these situations. So it's just like, all right, and even if he hasn't.
Yeah.
He's older, so he just moves a little bit slower. He's processing more.
Yeah, agreed.
Maybe Bud gets to that. I'm not entirely sure.
What's your nine?
My nine is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Great choice. Great choice. I really, really wanted to put it on the list. But, you know, when you're looking at the level of films that are on this list, I could not find my way to nudge something off.
But because
it's such a good movie.
But because the list is so wide and varied.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I watch this one way more than I do, or that one has an even better place in my heart than this one, which is great. Or I've lived longer with this, like Planes, Trains, than I have with some of these others. And to be you're both whatever, you know, you're equal footing in my mind.
Yeah.
But I've just spent more time with this one. I have more of a fondness for this.
Right.
And Planes, Trains, like I always loved John Candy as a kid. And Steve Martin was hit and miss to me.
Okay.
But when I liked him a lot.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Are you a big fan of The Jerk?
Love The Jerk.
Okay.
But I didn't really fall in love with that until I was an adult.
Right.
Because that's where his sense of humor makes all the sense in the world to me. Whereas a lot of his stand-up stuff never really resonated, but it was a different time.
Is it? Well, yeah.
And the unironic, ironic, whatever you want to call it, was great because they had lived through civil rights and Vietnam War and just tumultuous 20 years. The assassination of Kennedy, of Martin Luther King, of Bobby Kennedy, of in the pop culture. So I could see something being so lighthearted and unironic and unoffensive because everybody's like, man, I got enough shit on my plate. And that's why cocaine got big. This is fun. This is nice. I am sick of living in fucking just constant turmoil.
Yeah.
Although it still existed, but it didn't seem as, you know, up and down as the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah.
especially through Vietnam, like a war that in the time nobody wanted.
Yeah.
And looking back, just ridiculous.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed.
But anyway, so plane strains.
I don't know how you got to Vietnam from there. But
well,
you,
from Steve Martin. Got there. Yeah. But anyway, so
plane. He didn't serve. Yeah.
He did in other ways.
Yeah, I suppose.
Know? Juggling at Disneyland while that was going on. So to have these two guys kind of converge in a movie that it also seemed like an adult comedy to me when I saw it the first time. Like,
sure.
Relating to it. Mm-hmm. Not just in the stupid slapstick. There's still that. You know, what are these? Those aren't pillows. It's just as crass as it gets.
Right.
And it's great. It's between the two of them. It's fantastic. They have a great rapport. And Candy, you could just see how much of a career he could have had he stayed around.
Oh,
you
know, yeah.
Because he could pull off those moments, just like Robin Williams, man. Mm-hmm. When he is dialed in, because those big puppy dog eyes usually get a laugh, when they turn sad, you just wallow in there with him. Those two. Mel Gibson's awesome at that.
Yeah.
Where you see his eyes quake when he starts to cry, whatever the character is.
And you're like,
every time you're like, I believe this.
Yeah.
Whatever you're going through right now, man, I fucking believe this. Whatever place you had to get yourself to.
It's a fair point.
So anyway, Plane Strains, it's just a classic.
Yeah.
It's an absolute classic to me.
Of course it is. It's so funny what they go through and what they interact with and like the idea of the two pillows, all of that is really funny. But then for all the ridiculousness of the situations that they get into in the planes, in the trains, and in the automobiles, in those hotel rooms, at the end, there's this incredibly tender moment that the film has been subtly building to throughout the ridiculousness of the situations. And then when it hits, you're like, oh, shit. Like, there's some real human stuff going on here.
Well, because I think part of it is you're kind of identifying on some level with Steve Martin.
Yes.
You're just a dude that wants to get home. This guy's nice enough, but at the same time, I'd rather just be by myself. I'm miserable. Yeah. Let me just wallow in my type of misery.
Right.
And when that pivot happens, you're like, oh, man, I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
I am an asshole. That's how I felt the first time I saw it, because I was. It was just like, just let Steve Martin be. I like you, John Candy, but you are a bit much.
Right. See? Yeah, exactly. You do feel for Steve Martin, but then – right when Candy's like, Candy wins you over in that first scene in the hotel room, he's like, I like me. My wife likes me. My customers like me. You can hurt me. Mm-hmm. It's easy. And then you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But then he keeps doing dumb shit like setting the car on fire and not giving him back his card and just really screwing him over until finally. And then get really hurt like when Steve Martin tries to like essentially break up with him at the table there in the in the airport. That's so – he's like legitimately hurt because he's just like, I get it. Yep, here. Yep, hope I see. Yeah, right. Sure you will. And then just walks away.
Yeah.
It's like he broke up with him. It's like, you know, you've had those conversations in life with someone you're dating, right? You try to say like, oh, no, we'll be cool. We'll be friends. No. It's not going to happen. I was like blown away by that. And then, of course, like I said, at the end, just tender as hell.
It's almost like high school. Like they're adults living through.
Right.
It's a popularity contest of us.
Yeah.
And one of us is really on board. Why hurt you? Come on, man.
Yeah.
It's us against the world. What else we got?
Exactly. How many of us never get past high school, for fuck's sake? Or regress to it when the situation calls for it?
Dude, how often do you actually think about high school anymore?
Well, because I still have friends on Facebook from high school, I do. Instagram.
I do associate, but I think of them as more like contemporary to me as opposed to thinking about high school takes me back to a very specific era of my life.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't think I often like go back and think about it, to be perfectly honest. At this point anymore, I've thought about it a lot.
You know, you're not really built that way though, are you?
Like, sure, I'm contemplative about all kinds of things.
Oh, okay.
I think I've just thought enough of that.
you're at this level now where you've thought about everything you can.
Every mistake I ever made, why didn't I do that? And
That should not be the impulse for going back to think about high school all the mistakes.
I don't have that, but I'm just saying I've thought through every decision, every good time and bad time. I've relived those quite a bit, just like any good and bad time in my life.
Oh, sure. Sure.
So anyway, that was it. There you go. There's my nine.
There's your reflecting.
Eight was a very – it's not going to be on your list. King's Speech.
Oh, good choice. Okay. These are great choices.
I was one of the ones that said that year, that was clearly my favorite of the year. Mm-hmm. It was a crowded year. So of those, yeah. I don't know, the magic of that one.
I can understand that.
It's always resonated. I've watched it numerous times since then.
Okay.
I will more than likely watch it every few years at this point because I just enjoy the gradual buildup and mm-hmm. the give and take between the two of them.
Okay.
One of my favorite points is when Jeffrey Rush, I can't remember the character's name, but he's the
– Yeah.
The assumed doctor that then Colin Firth, the king, finds out isn't actually a doctor.
Right.
People took to calling him that, and I didn't want to stop him. But he can't help people. He has acquired that skill. And he knows it more intimately than the vast majority. You saw mm-hmm. all the rest of them with their ridiculous, put all these marbles in your mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
And do all this. And he's like, no, it's a matter of confidence, and you've lost your voice, and I can help you rebuild it.
Right, symbolically,
yeah. Yeah, but he does it with the he's got the headphones and he puts it on and they make a vinyl recording of him speaking that first time and to hear him just confidently bellow those words. Mm-hmm. The magic of that, and then he has to go back and overcome. But it's the overstepping by Jeffrey Rush when he's like, you know, what's wrong? You could be king. You'd be a good king. And he's like, that is treasonous. And this instant pivot, and you realize as much as we are friends, that I still have.
Yeah.
I live by a code that does not exist for the average kind of person.
Right.
But a beautiful back and forth tete-a-tete between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I've always enjoyed that. Helena Bonham Carter coming in and, you know, as the queen mum.
Yep.
She's perfect in it. It's great casting.
Yeah.
All aboard. Do you ever do the two, whatever?
No, I've never done that.
Pinky thumb thing to space out?
No. It's never been my thing. Like, I've always been aware of like that, but then you develop, when you listen to enough auditions of yourself, you understand where your sounds are on the mic.
Yeah.
So that if you're hitting the P's too hard or the S's too hard or the T's too hard or the diphthongs, all that stuff you kind of learn as you go along. Mm-hmm. When I was first doing it, I didn't do that. I just assumed kind of from the headphones. That really helps me a lot where I'm at on the mic. So when I'd go audition to William Morris, I'd be like, I'm here. This is good. The one thing I had to learn, though, was when you're doing the yells to step back from the mic. I did not know that when I first started doing stuff.
Oh, really?
Audition. Yeah. I thought, well, they can just adjust the volume later on and post. And he's like, no.
They're not taking the time to post.
They got no time to do that bullshit, right? Yeah. In your mind, you think, oh, they'll just fix it. You know, but no, those are the things that I had to learn. But no, I never did any of that. I just kind of always sensed it. So I never had a doctorate degree. So
I also think, too, microphones were a much different technology back then. So it's not like it's a very sensitive instrument.
It's a very good point.
So you had to speak with a certain volume.
People still say it, though. People still try to train you to be like fingers or whatever.
Yeah, they do.
It's that novice shit. Yeah.
But theirs was double that in
right,
time.
Right.
Maybe four fingers is the proper. I mean, you don't want to be like straight up on it.
They're like Snyder's. Snyder loves doing that shit.
Does he?
Oh, Snyder loves talking straight into the mic. And it drives me insane when he does it.
Well, I'm just happy you got him to talk at all. So there you go.
Yeah, right. That's Snyder's problem. Is he doesn't talk? That's not his problem. It's what he says that's the problem.
Said it to us a couple times. When am I coming back on? And my response is, when you give me more than a one-word answer.
Yeah, exactly.
I will have you on every week, man, if you want to.
When you respect the show again, you can come back on the show.
It's not even that. Just carry a fucking conversation with me, man. You do it when we're off.
That's what I'm saying. That's respecting the show.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
He wants to come on the Cinephiles because we're going to do The Insider soon, and he's been on my ass for a year to watch The Insider.
Yeah, you brought it up before.
Right, so he's going to be a guest, but I told him, I said, don't clam up. You clam up, I'll kick you off the show in the middle of the recording. I don't care. If you clam up, you're out. The show doesn't work if people are just sitting there going, yeah, cool.
I like that too. Okay, but why?
Yeah.
And why is it as soon as the cameras go off, you're like that the fucking WB frog. As soon as the people look away, you're dancing and singing again, and then camera goes on. It's just anathema to everything we do here.
Some people are like that, though. Some people are like when the camera...
True, but he shouldn't be one of them.
No, he shouldn't be one. You're right. As much as he's on camera, he should not be
fucking
one
boxed another damn director, you know what I mean, back in the day.
Yeah.
This guy has lived for the public before.
Mm-hmm. And he has his own podcast that he does on camera himself. And audio as well, I suppose. Yeah, so, right. Agreed. All right, that's your 8?
That was my 8. What you got?
Number 10 is Men in Black.
Okay, good choice.
I mean, Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith at this time, right? There's another one I left off because at that time, he wasn't a name. He's a name when he does Men in Black.
Okay.
Will Smith is a name when he does Men in Black. So for me, those two – and by the way, I had to take off another Will Smith movie that hurt my heart to take off, but I had to take it off because of quality films that are here. So to me
– So is this your only Will Smith movie?
This is my only Will Smith movie. Surprising.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You'll notice that was not in the list that I sent to you.
Of course. I know it wasn't. You have an unhealthy hatred for action movies. But
not good ones.
Oh, okay.
You know, right. I properly enjoy every good one. I'll even enjoy some bad ones.
Yeah.
Because I understand the merits of what they are. And that one to me is just weird. I don't get it.
So good.
Everybody spritzed in oil and action.
That's right.
Everybody looks like this. So this is Miami. Everybody's just kind of sweaty, glisteny at all times.
As Fernandez, he knows.
80s, I'll buy it. Too much cocaine. You know, sweating. Sure.
Just like, no, but Men in Black is great. I mean, like, who saw this coming? No one saw this. I mean, I can only imagine what the pitch was like in the room at a studio for this.
Was this part of the Will Smith when he said he sat down with his agent and they figured out what the most common blockbusters were?
So maybe.
He plotted out his next how many ever years looking for movies specifically like this.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, that's interesting.
It's smart.
It is smart. What sells?
Yeah, exactly. And this is still this one holds up. They've obviously that Men in Black International wasn't that good, and the third one was okay. Second one not so good, but this one was good, and this one still holds up. I watched it again the other day for like an hour and
I
really enjoyed
the
it.
Third one.
Yeah, I like the third one too.
I don't feel the need to go. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Stuhlbarg's great in that one. But this one, you know, you have this back and forth with him and Tommy Lee, and it's developing this idea of the older guy and the younger guy. And this is when Will's being cool Will, you know, like, I'm at the top of my game. I'm with the audience. Like, the audience goes with me because I'm the cool kid leading this thing. And Tommy Lee is, like, constantly, like, undercutting him. And kudos to Will to play that character that way. Mm-hmm. Like, when he hands him the cricket and you're just like, oh, that's a shot at him. That's a shot at him, and, you know. But seeing him react to everything and then how he navigates it and then has his own journey. And then, once again, it's like playing his automobiles. You have that ending. That's actually a very sweet ending as the relationship has developed. Because it's done so well through the movie, the sweet ending at the end is totally earned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was on my potentials. It was in that list.
Yeah.
It just – when it stacks up next to others, it's like, oh, this is just a better flat-out movie to me or I don't know. It got cut for time.
Fair enough.
It was a good sketch.
It was a good sketch.
It was a good sketch, but yeah.
Look for it on YouTube.
There are a couple who are just like, I want to, but no.
That'd be a fun little show to do.
What?
Like our after – the ones that got cut. Like an honorable mention show. That would be a fully paid show. Like people would have to pay us to do that show.
Why don't we
an extra amount.
Well, since we're talking about shows on the show, you know, very meta and at the same time behind the curtain. We just save those every time and then we turn it into a, you know, one of those shows.
Yeah. Okay.
The cut for time. The best – the top 10 cut for time.
Yeah. Love
you remember this list? This. We have to keep records and that's going to be a bit much.
That's what I'm saying.
I write everything down.
People have to pay us for that show.
Yeah, I write everything down. So it means I got to start typing everything down. And that's fine. But in all the years we've been doing this, I've only typed it out one time. I'm pretty much – I like the paper. I show up with the paper. I got pads. I like
– Right.
I like the tactile nature of it.
Anyway, it's a good movie. Barry Levinson, still funny, still holds up. And Vincent D'Onofrio, Tony Shalhoub steal every scene they're in when they're in the movie.
Shalhoub is so good.
It really is, right?
So good.
He's always good, man.
Yeah, it's just the bargaining, acting tough, and then his head gets blown off. All right, hey, and instantly, he's so good.
I know, I love it. And then Linda Fiorentino, of course, I always forget that she's in this. That's right. All right, so my number nine, and this is a bit of a cheat, but it's one I want to throw on there because I do think it works as a double bill is Star Trek II. By this time,
sure,
it's Nimoy and Shatner.
I can't fight you because I don't know where they were in the public standing, but I'd assume so.
Yeah. I mean, after
everybody knew him.
Everybody knew him from the original series. And then, of course, Shatner had done T.J. Hooker and all these other things. I think that's around that time. But either way, they did the first movie in 80. But people know Nimoy and Shatner. People know Nimoy and Shatner. And so you're like, okay, when they come back for the second one, which is done at a way lower budget, But it's focused on their relationship, right? The whole film is about their relationship, mm-hmm. the needs of the many versus the needs of the few. Kirk's having his birthday. Spock has to go out on this training mission. They all have to go out on this training mission. Khan comes back, which is from the original series. And so it's like, okay, these two dudes got to figure this out. Yes, they have an ensemble cast. Yes, of course. Sulu, Uhura, Chekhov. Yeah, but it's really about these two dudes.
100%.
Yeah. Star Trek is built on Nimoy and Shatner. Yeah,
eventually it becomes ensemble.
Right, right. But it's Spock and it's Kirk.
Yeah, even later on. But
even
in this
McCoy
iteration.
Isn't part of – as strongly a part of the top bill as Kirk and Spock. So yeah. So and as the film progresses, it's their relationship that we're exploring. It's their thing and what have you. And so to me, this counts as a double bill type of movie because we're following Spock's journey on this thing. We're following Kirk's journey on this thing. And then when they cross over, Spock and Kirk are both involved in the situation emotionally. In all the changes that go on, and then by the end, when you have that moment inside the chamber there, where Spock does what he has to do to save the ship and sacrifice himself, it's one of the greatest moments ever on film, let alone Star Trek history. Film, to see the kind of acting in this moment, the sparsity of the acting, the honesty of the emotion, and then the final bell at the end, the button at the end of the scene, you're just like, oh my God, it's...
It is incredible.
That's what I would say.
I know how much Star Trek means to you. So
it does. It does.
We talk about one of the best, you know, on film of all time. A lot of people will agree with you.
Yeah.
So
it's one of the most emotionally – one of the best emotional scenes I've ever seen. All right. So then my number eight is American Gangster.
Okay. Great choice.
Yeah. I think Russell Crowe – this is Russell Crowe and Denzel, both of them in their prime as like older leading men.
Apex Predators.
Apex Predators. Yes. Great
They're both,
point, Matt.
Yeah.
They're both like chomping the young guys up and spitting them
exactly.
out.
Exactly. And, oh, okay. Like two of them not circling each other. What happens?
Yeah.
What
right?
happens?
This is full of some great interactions between him, between Russell and Denzel. Ridley does such a great job with the film, like the pacing of the film. Because it's a long film. It's like 2 hours 20. And he does a great job pacing it out to where until they actually meet. He does a great job establishing each of them in their own worlds mm-hmm. until they finally come together to work together at the end. But until then, you are experiencing, like you said, Matt, two alpha predators, apex predators, right, walking around in their world and doing their thing.
They're just circling, like they're swimming, two sharks mm-hmm. out in the ocean. They see each other.
Yeah.
They don't like it. They know eventually they're going to have to interact.
Yeah. The confrontation's coming.
Yeah. I mean, Crowe's, once he specifically finds out that it's Denzel's character, he finds it out from his mob buddy because his mob buddy's like, hey, you need to lay off. And he's like, who is he?
Yeah.
But because he's importing all that heroin, which is crazy, that to me is the most fascinating aspect of it in its entirety is the U.S. government was inadvertently, whatever, you know, bring it back in empty coffins.
It's a terrible thing to take advantage of the American government and soldiers that died overseas.
It is brilliant. On his part, he got free international shipping.
He did, but it's terrible moral-wise.
Oh, it is. Across the board. You're using coffins to ship drugs, which is going to lead to more people in coffins.
Yeah, true.
So you should also invest in a coffin company because you are going to be rolling in it, my man. you're dealing in death entirely.
Yeah, yeah.
But how do you even think to do that?
Yeah,
that's crazy talk.
I don't disagree with you.
Nobody noticed, and the system mm-hmm. went on for a long time. And
what's great, too, is you've got a lot of incredible actors throughout the movie, but when they come together, you can sense a level of respect between the two guys, you know, and that's probably carried through off camera as well. This idea that Denzel's going to do his thing, Russell's going to do his thing, and they're going to find a way to mesh their acting styles in these scenes. Because even in the scenes together, they have their space between each other, right? Because it's like you need a wide berth for both these dudes. Mm-hmm. And so it's worth it. It's such a great – it's one of these like films that no one talks about enough from Ridley Scott.
I just – because they had done so many things so well, I wanted the payoff to be better at the end.
Ah, okay.
So because it doesn't get – the grittiness – the interesting nature of the story, the performances, it was building, building, building. To me, it fizzles out at the end.
Right.
It doesn't have as hard an impact. So it's always been like, it's good to me. Could have been great.
Yeah. Yeah. I disagree with you.
You know, a lot of people think it's great, and that's fine. You know, I just wish I was wanting something more, I guess.
What's your number seven?
My seven is Midnight Run.
Oh, Groden. Okay. I'll give it to you. I don't think it's true, but I'll give
really?
It to
okay.
you.
Really? Okay. I don't know that.
Yeah, right. You yeah, okay.
I fair. Wasn't so yeah. to me though, Charles Grodin was basically like he was a known commodity. My parents knew who he was because he was on Tonight Show and everything else, and Letterman because he was such a good guest.
Yes, he was.
So that's my assumption.
I think that's fair. Okay. I can see it from that point of view.
So right. he existed and you knew who exactly who he was, and yeah. he also had a specific like group of friends. So the guy it's kind of one of those of occasionally, like, there's a musician that bounced around to all these different bands and
yeah.
whatnot
yeah.
because everybody recognizes how good they are and they want to be around them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Groden to me was like, look at his – who appear to be his closest friends. These are all alphas. These yeah. are all like
– yeah.
So that's what it was to me is okay. the, when I saw it. And I was like, hey, and it's De Niro.
Yeah.
So I clearly knew both of them. But if you don't want to count that,
no,
that's fine.
It's your list, brother, man. Yeah, we always say this.
I know.
Come up with our list on
the end.
There's
one that I was like, I have to cut because technically I don't think I knew who one of them was before this
yeah.
when I saw it. Yeah. And I maybe vaguely knew who the other was.
I had to make that cut too, and it was hard for me to make that cut, but I did it. I didn't like it. I didn't like it.
Me either.
I didn't like it.
It was like, well, yeah, but the same thing. We're talking about the same one. Both performances were next level.
Yeah.
Next
yeah.
level.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, I don't know. I created this arbitrary definition, so I'm gonna. So I'm gonna put Midnight Run, you yeah. know, here at number seven.
That's a window into our thought process, honestly, because that's the way it goes sometimes. Once we set up an arbitrary list for ourselves or arbitrary parameters for our lists, we kind of become beholden to that. And some of these films that
in our own heads.
Some of the films we want to put on these lists, we don't. Someone accused you the other day on Twitter of like gaming the list because you do certain things.
Never happened in a million years.
Yeah, yeah. We're not built that way. We'll take the hits. Both of us take the hits. But I think Matt can guess sometimes what might be on my list, or I can guess what might be on Matt's list, but we don't rank.
I know because there have been shows where I was like, trust me, I know going into this, when I'm saying this right now, it's going to make it higher on our collective
yeah,
list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I knew that going into it. You're going to have that at like one.
Yeah.
And I still think it's in the discussion, but I think it's more like a three.
Right.
And you're not going to have my number one. You'll have it like four or five.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm going to lose that. I know I'm going to lose that.
Ooh.
And the poster's coming down.
I don't like that. Let me put that back up.
There's a poster on the back of the door.
Yeah.
The masking tape does look a little, it's all sagging. Every single piece is sagging.
It should be time for a little more tape. It's the Schnapp poster. I don't want the Schnapp poster to come down. No way.
No. But we should get it some more tape.
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe a frame or something.
Yeah.
And so Midnight Run, I mean, look, it's the height of, I think, Groden to me on some level, mm-hmm. outside of when he would panel.
Yeah.
After that. I'd have to look at his, you know, filmography, but I'm pretty sure this is, because after that it was like Beethoven. Like he'd show up things here and there, but Beethoven was his bread and butter. And I didn't watch any of those.
Well, that's what I'm getting at.
I know. Later on. It's true.
Yeah.
But to me, Groden exists on a different level because he was around so much, he got these shots. Like he just knew all the people. And
right. That's a good point. Yes, absolutely.
So he's a guy. It's like all the different connections that Harry Dean Stanton has. He was best friends with such and such,
right.
and such and such and such and such. And I'm like, wow, really? I never would have pegged for them for like running mates, you know? Like hanging out type of thing. That's interesting. What were they like together?
Right.
But it also makes me go, damn, Harry Dean Stanton, you know, I always liked you as an actor.
Harry was a player, man.
He was. But at the same time, there was a second like, yeah, he was a damn good character actor.
Oh, yeah. He shows up in the weirdest places, too.
He does.
Seeing him in Pretty in Pink, I'm like, what are you doing here? The dad of Molly Ringwald.
Ah, you know, I know the director. We're old buddies. He had a small part. I just came to hang out.
We're all drinking buddies.
Yeah. It's like 3 days work. I get a nice little payday. We get to hang out, see each other, and then I'm out.
When he showed up in Avengers, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing in here?
I know.
For one scene.
Hulk comes down back to Earth?
Yeah. For one scene.
Why not? It's great.
It's Harry Dean Stanton. Why not?
Yeah, if you can get Harry Dean Stanton and put him in the movie, he's more than happy to show up and just do one line.
I'm sure you can pay double his quote. It's Marvel money. You can pay double his quote.
Easy.
Just to work with him.
Yeah. Well, and also to buy more goodwill in this town. You know?
That, true.
Because a lot of people are upset with you because you're making superhero films.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but we're also giving tons of people paid work.
Yeah. A lot of people paid work.
So it's hard to, you know, bite the hand that feeds you.
Exactly. Quit the bitching. Just enjoy the movies.
They're good about it. They are.
Good about it.
They are. They're good about it.
All right, was your number seven?
That was my seven. My six, not going to be on your list.
Okay.
Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah, not on my list. Knock yourself out. Go ahead.
Yes.
Feel free.
Yes. I wanted to put it higher.
This is why the people love you, Matt, because you put these things on your list.
It's not, but because we understand. Although we have, there have been a few people that have checked it over the years and be like, oh, I never saw it. Like, basically, it was before my time type of thing.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel spry. Oh, and
try being on this end.
I know. It's okay. Listen. Guess what waits for no man?
Yeah, that's right. 39-29, bro. As the great Shaq. Shaquille O'Neal, great philosopher Shaquille O'Neal would say.
So they would say they went back and watched Dumb and Dumb, and they're like, yeah, no, not for me. And
it's a timing thing.
It really is. But I think that one to me is more universal than, say, Ace Ventura.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Or, I would say it's his most, I think from that time, that slice of time in his period, in his comedy career, it is the most fully realized comedy that he's done.
Where he's going 100?
Yes.
Because the others, I think Ace Ventura 2 is closer to that, like how he really wanted to do the character the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one is a more complete movie.
Yeah.
Although I know you don't like the second one, but I think it's got, man, it's some of his moments are some of my favorites. Mm. Thank you, Dark Continent. Good night. Just so dumb.
It's the worst.
So it is the worst, but it's also the best. Oh, you chitty chitty bang bang chitty chitty bang 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 bang, bang. Singing along.
Just, I'm just like, what is happening? I'm watching it. And I go, what is happening?
It's just pure absurdity. The comparing the wounds.
That's the funny moment, man.
There's quite a few in that movie.
Quite a few.
There's quite a few in that movie.
I think I like the
Bumblebee Tuna. Bumblebee Tuna.
I like that moment. But I also like him wrapping the dude around his neck.
You'll not pass go. You do not collect $200.
That's funny. That was funny.
Okay.
Him climbing out of a rhino's ass, not funny.
No, but the loogie in the face, funny.
Okay.
When it comes out, it's just they didn't show. They just showed the aftermath. Yeah. I'm fine with that. I don't need to see them actually spitting on each other's faces.
That's true.
It's funnier to me they come out and they're just, how did you get covered? Who cares? Look at all this just comedic proportion of mucus on your face. That to me is a better punchline. It is. Because otherwise it's just like it's too over the top. It's too ham-fisted.
Fair enough. Okay. That was your six? Oh, so, yeah. Keep going, man.
Six. It works for me. It's an all-time classic for comedy for me. Yep. We landed on the moon. Just the fact that they were at all times, at every twist turn, they tried to play it as dumb as they possibly could and never deviated from that. They never got any smarter. Their stupidity just happened to work out for them a couple times.
Yeah.
Through blind, sheer, dumb numbers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just number of times doing it. And I think it works, especially from Jeff Daniels' perspective, because Jim Carrey, we know, can do this.
Yeah.
And for you to come in and give an equally idiotic performance,
mm-hmm.
fully committed, that is also utterly different from Carrey's.
Yeah.
That's impressive, because the easier thing would just be to mimic what he's doing because he's so good at it.
Yeah.
And you're not known for that. And to come in with a fully just formed, like, that's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
So, you know, there's some art in there, kids. There's some art in there.
Some art. All right. My number seven is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That is actually a pun.
Okay. I wanted to put it higher. I did. But I couldn't. Then my number six is All the President's Men.
That's a pun.
Ooh. Well. Interesting. All right. What's your number five? What's your number five?
My five is the punt from just a second ago.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
All right. Let's talk about it.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Spoiler alert. Do we have to give that at this point? What do you want to do?
I guess.
Do you want to put a timer on it?
Sure. Why not?
We're not going to put a timestamp in it, but we will give you a timer. We'll tell you exactly how long we're going to go.
Yeah. But wait, why don't we break for our sponsors right now for the audio version of this podcast?
Okay.
And then we'll come back and talk about this so you can decide for yourself if you want to listen in. Or do you want to wait? You want to wait after we talk about this?
No, that makes sense to take the time right now. It's very smart.
Yep.
Thank you. I don't know why I just stared at you for a second. I was just trying to pull this up and process what you're saying.
No worries.
Apparently that confused the old noggin. Sure. Let's take a quick break.
All right. Well, we're back. Thanks, everybody, for coming back and listening to the second half of this Top 10 episode, the Top 10 double-billed movies. Matt, when we went to the break, you were talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
We never set a timer. That's what we should have done before the break.
We'll do it now.
When we come back, how long you want to go?
5 minutes.
Five minutes.
All right.
Starting now.
Boom. So if you haven't seen the movie, we're spoiling things now for the next 5 minutes possibly. Yeah. So letting you know.
Eight is a true double billing.
Yes, absolutely.
Those two are allowed to do full lead stuff
sure.
throughout.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've always been a sucker for both those guys. They even if everybody else didn't enjoy the movie as much, like, say, for Pitt, World War Z, mm-hmm. I actually like that movie.
Yeah, I like World War Z.
Kind of a lot.
I don't hate it as much as everybody else.
Yeah, I understand the parts that you're talking about,
sure.
It doesn't make sense in a couple parts here and there. But overall, I really think there's something there, and I do hope that Fincher does the sequel, and it actually comes to fruition, because I think there's a world there to be salvaged, just like Men in Black International. Bring back the two leads. I think you could really do something with them because they do have good chemistry. We've seen it.
Yep.
It just didn't work out this time. It was not a good movie.
Right.
But anyway, let's go ahead. I don't want to dominate the full.
No, no. I enjoyed it too. I saw it twice. Really enjoyed both Pitt's performance and DiCaprio's performance. And the fact that Tarantino kind of played a game on the audience, because for years those guys had competed with each other for the same roles. Mm-hmm. And people had been clamoring for them to work together. So to have Pitt be the stunt double for DiCaprio, mm-hmm. I thought it was brilliant because that makes all the sense in the world. As much as DiCaprio could play the stunt double, he'd probably do it really well. There's an organic truth to him to Brad Pitt being the stunt double to DiCaprio, because Pitt doesn't take it as seriously as DiCaprio does. He's just as good. He just doesn't take it as seriously. Pitt doesn't angle for Oscars. That's DiCaprio's game. So having him play the actor who's desperately trying to save his career and stay in the top list makes sense for DiCaprio. To have Brad Pitt laid back, playing the stunt double, hoping he gets a shot to do these kind of things, that plays into Pitt's overall demeanor in a lot of his films, where he's more chill, more laid back, and not as much of an active protagonist in a lot of things that are going on. So it just makes all kinds of sense in the world. So their chemistry coming together lets you cheer for both guys in different ways.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. And I never heard that breakdown for DiCaprio. Yeah. I like that. It makes all the sense in the world. I like that. He is my favorite part of it. Nothing against Pitt.
Oh, Pitt's my favorite part. So that's funny. Okay.
We saw the scene in the trailer when the little girl tells him.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It is even more effective. And you know it's fucking coming. But when she sells it like his, like, goddamn right. type of thing. I was like, oh, my God. I knew that was coming, and that was even better than I hoped it would be. You are acting the living shit out of this failing actor part.
Yep.
It's so good. Like, in those moments, because Pitt is just calm, cool, collected.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's great to watch.
Yeah.
You know, he's a high-performance, like, car.
Yep.
Just driving at 80 miles an hour, perfect.
Because that's what's required of him in the role.
It is.
So it just makes all the sense of the world.
Yeah. Fast, but smooth and steady.
Yeah.
If that makes any kind of sense.
Absolutely.
But he does later when the you know, fucking Helter Skelter kids come in. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, boom, dog, bam, coming in. But when he walks out, I knew the flamethrower was coming, I guess, the first time. But I still was like, oh, my God, flamethrower. Oh, I was so excited.
He's never caught out, which is what I like about Pitt's performance. No matter what situation he's in, he's always in command. He's never like
at camp.
Yeah, right. Whereas DiCaprio at times is like frustrated, and one of the greatest scenes in the movie is when he's like messes up his line and goes into the trailer, destroys the trailer, and comes back out and nails it.
What are you doing? Just flat out like lost it, broken down, and it makes sense, man. We
totally.
I remember one time I was shooting a commercial, and I'm sure this has happened to you, especially like on Wind Talkers, where you have the abstract thought of, I wonder how many millions of people will end up seeing this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you have like, well, I can't think about that. And it doesn't make me nervous. It does in that moment. Like, things like, that's kind of crazy. The sheer numbers of people that are either passively or actively going to watch me do this, whatever it is absurd.
Yeah.
And then move about my day. Get it together! But the pit at the camp.
Oh, the pit at the camp.
He just clobbers that dude, takes him out, right?
Yeah.
That to me is the essence of the stupid question of field of like 12-year-olds. How many do you think you could beat up before they overtook you type of thing? And that one, like, so he took out the whoever was charging. Luckily, is it Taylor Kitsch?
Yeah, yeah.
He's out on a horse. Right. That guy would definitely, like, he would put up a fight.
Yeah, but he takes him out anyway later on.
He does.
So,
but the one dude he just crushes.
Yeah, he does. And but that's why you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, that stops everybody behind, though. Yeah. There's 20. You got numbers. You can take them. But if that dude was your best option in this current moment.
Yeah.
All right. So there's our 5 minutes.
There's our 5 minutes.
So it's good. We both liked it. It's on our list.
Well, speaking of Pitt, my number five is Fight Club.
That's a punt.
Wow.
Yeah.
I am so curious now to see what you have in these top four.
Well, four was All the President's Men for me.
Okay, so we're moving on to your four because, like, you said we got a punt Fight Club, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so four, yeah. All the President's Men.
Well, that's the punt from you from, it six?
My number six, yes.
Six, yeah.
At least we got some commonality on this team.
Yeah, we do, and it's not far off from one another.
These two guys were big, big, big in the 70s, Hoffman and Redford, two different reasons.
This is a huge movie because everybody knows this story, Watergate. So you better pull this off.
Yep.
And they really do.
Yeah. I mean, a great, like, Woodward and Bernstein, just great names. That roll off the tongue like Redford and Hoffman or Hoffman and Redford. I don't know if Dustin's listening and watching. He wants to put his name first. I know that he's got that kind of ego. It's fine. But yeah.
And Redford is so seemingly cool.
He's so like, whatever. I run an institute. Fun.
That's why I always liked Pitt. He seems the exact same type. When they still work together, yeah. I was like, makes all the sense in the world. Pitt's like, whatever. I don't care.
Yep.
My life is pretty fucking solid.
And to me, like, it's McQueen to Redford to Pitt. That's the connection. They're all essentially the same kind of actors.
You ever thought about that? Like how... singularly, I tried to write a joke about this. I could never, I could never get it. But how singular, unique a person like that's life is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe more so for DiCaprio because he got the run earlier. Because Pitt had to come out here and he was in random things for like, for years.
Growing Pains, I think. Or no, DiCaprio was in Growing Pains. One of those guys.
Yeah. That's what vaulted him. But I think although Pitt made a one episode or two episode on Growing Pains, I think you're right.
Yeah, maybe he did.
Dated or Tracy Ties? Gold or something.
Or was it Tracy Gold? Okay.
I think so.
All right.
I think you might be right on that one.
Fair enough.
DiCaprio is known for that.
Let's take a look here while you're talking.
But like he had a failed pilot that only had or a failed show that was like six episodes or something. And then he was on this. And then Thelma and Louise's introduction.
Yeah, that's when people knew who Pitt was, like discovered who Pitt was.
Went, who the hell is this?
Yeah, who's that
Not
guy?
Even discovered. We haven't hit pay dirt just yet. Because he didn't get quite a shot until like 2-3 years after that.
Right.
He had to work up his bona fides a little bit, but he got better, you know, projects thereafter type of thing.
Let me see. He was on 21 Jump Street, Dallas, Head of the Class.
Oh, yeah. He was it her name? Simone's boyfriend or something
Simone's
like that?
Simone's boyfriend. Two separate Growing Pains episodes not playing the same character. 2 years apart. I'll be damned.
That sounds like 70s sitcom stuff.
Then he was on something called Glory Days, which I don't remember anything about.
I think
Glory
that's the
Days.
Failed show.
Oh, wait, that might have been it then.
That only went X number of episodes.
Spike, some guy named Spike.
Yeah, it's a bunch of random. But at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
Probably had all the confidence in the world because he's always been able to get the girl. And people are always nice to him because he's so handsome. And then you make more money when you're that good looking just by default. Like if you look at the numbers. The better looking you are on average, the way more money you make.
Your life is better.
It's easier. So just if you are the 1% of that 1% and you're Brad Pitt, like what is your life like? Like I don't even understand. I can't process. When other famous people say that dude's actually famous.
Yeah. That dude's famous.
That dude's famous.
Yeah.
Like we're all in the fame business and everybody knows my name and my face. But if we walk into a room, they all run to you first. Every single one of them.
No.
Well, that's what Clooney would say, him and Damon after Ocean's 11.
Oh, right, yeah.
When they found out who was really famous because Pitt would go out and the paparazzi would just swarm him. And I think it was Clooney who was like, and then basically they'd almost be done with the role of film. They'd come over and just get a couple of me and Damon. And they're done. But when you see that, you see like we're all movie stars.
Yeah.
We're all making obscene money. We all live in Hollywood and Malibu and all that.
Yeah.
But
this
other weird... And on some level, I guess they would be envious, but mostly not.
Yeah, true.
I'm glad I don't have to deal with that bullshit.
DiCaprio was in Poison Ivy, that Drew Barrymore film from 92.
Was he really?
Yeah, he had a small part called Guy. His name is Guy in the film. He was in Critters 3. Parenthood was the series he was on as well. He did do Growing Pains, right? Yeah. But then he was on Roseanne, uncredited as Darlene's classmates. He was probably an extra in that damn show.
Probably.
And in the new Lassie in 1989.
I'm actually surprised he ended up being as handsome as he did.
That's a fair point.
When he was younger.
Uh-huh.
Because those eyes didn't really fit his head at that point. It didn't. If you go back and look at Growing Pains.
I'm going to let you tell him that.
He grew into it. Dude. Yeah. Dude's a handsome guy.
Yeah.
Like ridiculously. There's a reason that six models are always with him willing to bone at all times.
He is just next level, dude.
He is.
Yeah. He's got that smoothness.
He doesn't have to do the what's his name? Oh, the ridiculously named guy that dated Michelle Pfeiffer and dated
Fisher Stevens.
There you go, Fisher Stevens.
Yeah, Fisher Stevens.
Like, that dude behind the scenes must have all the confidence in the world.
And, yeah. What do they call that? There's a term for that. Boatman. Oh. He's a boatman.
A boatman? You mean boatman. Well, pipe man is what I think Rappaport says.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, Rappaport's dangerous to follow.
Well, I don't follow. He's popped up on certain things I've heard over the years every once and again.
I think it's called boatman, isn't it? Am I wrong on this, boys, people?
I don't know.
No, I'm wrong.
What is boatman?
Boatman is the neighbor that runs the little boat gang. He's very fond of cars and computers and allergic to condoms. Okay, maybe he is the boatman. All right.
Sure.
All right, fair enough. There's something – I can't remember the term for it, though. But anyway, let's move on because I don't want to get in trouble on the show. All right, that's your number five?
That was my four.
Four. All the presidents – okay, yeah. So Watergate, Ben Bradley.
Deep throat.
Deep throat. Nixon.
it reminds me on some level of other things I may hypothetically have seen at some point. I'm not sure when. My memory escapes me. But in 20 years, we might see a remake of this.
I don't think so. There's no way they let that happen. The way they're lying to themselves about a million other things. No way they let that happen.
You know, movies will be made. Movies will be made.
I'm sure movies will be made. Movies are made about W. So, yeah.
I mean, there was already a Fox News TV show that was really good, and now there's a Fox News movie that's coming. It's supposed to be really good.
Yeah. Did you like the Fox News TV show?
Yeah, I thought it was great.
What, Voice in the Room? What is it called? Shout in the Room?
Loudest Voice
in the Room. It's good, huh?
Russell Crowe is great.
Okay. I can't get past the makeup.
Oh, okay. Snyder, never bothered me once. I was just like, okay, this is what he's doing. Fine.
Snyder and Shannon both tell me to watch this thing. This is incredible. I said, you're a political junkie. This is totally up your alley. But I can't get past the makeup. Maybe I just got to sit down.
It's super interesting.
Oh, maybe I'll download them for Australia.
And for watch the trip?
Yeah, for the trip. It's a 15-hour ride. Might as well watch something. This is such great work from Hoffman, too, and Redford. And, you can tell Hoffman has his style, his manic style, right? And very determined style to, essentially browbeat people. And Redford's more smoother. It's a good cop, bad cop, essentially. Because to Hoffman, it seems so damn logical, everything he wants to do. Whereas Redford is more like, no, dude, you got to understand.
Well, there's a way
people.
To do this.
Right. There's a way to do this. Yeah. It makes sense, but there's a way to do this, right? And when they find their moments where Jason Robards is like putting their – like out on the front yard when Robards is like, you guys got to get this right or you're fucked. You're basically fucked. And so it's like, oh, shit. Because you forget how close they came to losing the story, how close – and it's funny to watch the old clips because you don't remember this, but like of Republicans coming out saying the same thing that they're kind of saying now and not trying to get political, but kind of what they're saying now with Trump. Well, it's like, oh, this is a witch hunt. This is wrong. Yeah, you shouldn't come after this guy. It's a nothing story.
They're trying to protect their power.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who's – in power at that time, they're trying to protect their power. Yeah. So if it's a Democrat, a Republican, a Whig, a what have you.
Yeah, a Whig.
Like, whatever the version is. I do think we need to move off a two-party system.
Oh, here we go. All of a sudden we slid into this.
Well,
yeah.
Just to be more representative of – because I just – the binary of one or the other doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Especially now that we all can subdivide societally to all these little niches.
Oh, that's a fair point.
It's how do these two standard bearers represent now – this wide, vast array.
It's people of color, LGBTQ community.
I know.
Right? But that's a fair point.
It is. But I don't know how you govern like that, too.
We have to go
make coalition. Then we'll pass even less.
That's how we used to be back at the beginning of the start of the country.
I just think it'd be so contentious then. We're never going to – I think this current Congress is like the least productive in the history of – they say that every
–
this is great. This is nothing. Nothing's getting through. And you're like, I mean – there are still deals being made.
Yeah, of course.
Things are still happening. It's not like they're all sitting around, fucking playing games on their, phones or whatever. Sure, they're happening. Every once again, I couldn't think of any stupid hot whatever Angry Birds version is, but that doesn't.
No.
Not like it did.
I can't play games on my phone anymore. I can see people do it in on planes or in restaurants or just sitting around. And I'm just going, wow, I would rather be on Twitter reading an article. So to me, it's weird to see people playing games.
I play Risk.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you play against a computer?
Yeah, because the problem is if you play against people, it takes too long.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have a counter for every person's move.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And by and large, everybody goes the full counter. So whatever it is, and like a game takes forever.
I'm sure.
Whereas if it's just computer, you can fast forward. But the competition's not as hard. But it's just like something to pass. Mm-hmm. I try and make it harder and harder for myself.
Right.
To try and figure out the, you know.
That makes sense.
I do other games, but it's kind of limited. I play a game called Free Cell. I used to do Mahjong, but I don't do that anymore.
Okay. What do you, old grandma playing Mahjong?
It's pattern recognition. It's, you know, you're just using your mind in a different way.
Yeah.
Okay. Instead of just passively. I read all the articles. I do all that, but my brain needs a break from that too.
I understand. My girlfriend loves playing the crossword puzzle. She's discovered an app on the the Galaxy Note. She was addicted to that shit for like 3 weeks. Like, she was playing constantly.
Oh, I used to play Words with Friends.
Oh, yeah. Words with Friends was like, I had to wean myself off of that.
I went basically it was – I had three regular games where we were playing a game at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had other randoms, people that would, you know, play whatever else. But with the three, it's whoever won, they start the next game.
Yeah.
And then you just start over and everybody was on top of it. Just constant. Like, I was playing that all the time.
For me, I had 10 people I was playing constantly on Words with Friends. Like, constant rotation. Okay. Or eight. I think it's eight to ten.
So
or
however, to weed out.
Like, however much you're allowed to do it. But – it was like chasing gambling, Matt. It's like every time I'd lose, I'd be like, start a game. Start a game. You know, it was like that chasing thing. And I, one person beat me all the time. Like, she's a editor for a
magazine. I'm fine with
magazine.
That. I slowly whittled away the people that I knew were cheating.
Oh.
So I got down to.
I didn't conceive that people would cheat on a game like that.
Oh, fuck wow. Yeah. I got a buddy. Look, he's.
Really?
He's all well and good. He's a fantastic guy. Solid as can be. And he is smart. I will give him that. I'm not saying he's dumb.
All right.
But he would drop words and I would have to look it up and be like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know the moment in mitosis when this actual chemical bond is being broken. That's called this. Way to get 64 points.
Right.
Fuck you. You look that. You've used a website or something and gave them all your letters and they spit out and you figured out what the best would work out for you.
Right, right, right.
Bullshit. I played him for a long time because he only did it every once and again.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like your record is unfaithful. Like, you have an extra 10% wins because I know you've cheated on specific games.
Yeah, for
a fact. I'm not playing with you anymore. So it got down to like three people I knew were not cheating. If you win, you win. If I win, I win. It's just like I'm just here to try and, you know, have fun, use my brain.
That's fair.
Anyway, all the president's men.
There it is.
What do you
Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid is my number four.
Oh, that's a punt.
Wow.
So what do you got at the top
of
your list?
Fuck? We're going to have a nice battle of this. All right. What's your number three?
Yeah. What on my list did you take that I didn't? My number three is Fight Club.
Okay.
Because they were both solidly. So from
yes,
Primal
they were.
Fear.
Absolutely.
I knew Ed Norton. Mm-hmm. And Pitt had been around for a while.
Yep.
When Fight Club came out. So they were both top of the line, you know.
Definitely.
Advertised individuals.
Did you see – did you listen to Norton's interview with Bill Simmons yet?
Kind of in the background as I did something else. Okay. I heard most of it, but there were moments where it was like I don't know how long that was. And I was so laser focused on this.
Pitt said to Norton right?
In the back of the theater.
Yeah, if you guys haven't listened to it yet, I would definitely recommend listening to the interview Norton has with Bill Simmons because he says that to him. He says that Pitt said to him after they finished watching Fight Club in the back of the theater, well, this is a film that we're both – like we might never do a film this good again is what he basically said. It's that good. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll be proud to be part of this film going forward. And this film still holds up, still works. It's generational. Absolutely, because it's about this idea of what is manhood, what isn't. This idea of being a slave to materialism versus who you really are. Are you losing your connection to your primal nature as a mammal born from Neanderthals?
Or
you know what I'm saying? Well, evolved.
What do you want from life, but what do you think life is?
Yeah, and what defines you? And what defines you know?
Ultimately.
Yeah.
It's one of those – it's so slick. It's so stylized. It's so – specifically itself, that on some level I wanted it to kind of fail.
Yeah.
It's like you're just – you know.
Right.
Like, no. And – because I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it when it had been out on DVD for a while because I was hesitant. Even though I liked Pitt so much, it just seemed too slick, too we're trying to make a bro movie and we know all the elements. Right. And then I saw it and I was like, I don't think bros will understand what this is actually talking about. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. Yep. And you have to have the bros like Tyler Durden, who is this flamboyantly wild character. That's who they're trying to identify with. Right. Ultimately, he's a schizophrenic figment of another man's imagination.
Right.
That shot through the back of the, you know, when he goes down and he's still alive afterwards. Oh, my God. Did you know that's down in Nakatomi Plaza area?
Oh, really?
That where they shot that?
Makes sense.
It does. And that weird, all of a sudden, Avenue of Stars.
Oh, just yeah.
Five buildings out of nowhere, these huge skyscrapers.
Yeah, in Century City, yeah.
Yeah, and just nothing. Nothing around it. It's such it's a true. Weird, out of nowhere, boom. And then it's like, oh, Nakatomi Plaza.
It's right at the top of a hill, too. Like, you when you go Olympic, you're going up to get to that area.
Yeah. Oh, no. Is it – I thought it was Pico and Wilshire. Mm. Isn't it between those two?
Well, no. Pico, Olympic is – Pico's below Olympic.
You're right.
Yeah. Olympic's there. And then Wilshire. Wilshire, right. Wilshire is the other thing.
That's how I went. I had to stop there a couple times.
Yeah, yeah.
At a somebody's something or other.
That's where they're doing Ford versus Ferrari tonight. I'm not going.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But yeah, those it's random. But like this film also, the relationship he has with Helena Bonham Carter's character is fantastic as well, because she's kind of this stereotypical, like, kind of messed up girl going from place to place. Mm-hmm. But then what she's doing is slowly exposing him. And making him take a look. So it's when she comes into his life that Durden becomes an even stronger part, because he's to create this like completely new person to try to counteract what's happening with him and Helena Bonham Carter, right? And he doesn't have the confidence to get a woman like this, but Tyler Durden does. And so he becomes that character to get her.
Yeah.
But she thinks she's still with this guy who has these two sides to him. And it isn't until like the thing near the end there that she realizes what the hell is going on.
Well, it just makes her acting even better go back to watch it the later times. Mm-hmm. When she's like, who are you right now?
Yeah.
The first time you saw that, you're like, why are you being a bitch? Like, but, you know, it has nothing to do with you being a woman.
Right.
Or anything else. Fine. Why are you being a dick? Like, why are you cranky pants all of a sudden?
Yeah.
And then afterwards, you see the second time, you're like, yeah, but that would be weird. Hanging out with one person and then just 180 degrees the other.
Yeah. What's her name again in the movie? I'm not in Schmodown shape right now. You can clearly tell. It's not Mona.
No.
No?
Shoot.
Right? What is her name in the movie? Darla. Yeah.
I was in there. I knew it was an A. It ended with an A, but I was like, Darla. Angela. Krista.
Mona.
Yeah, Mona. I knew it was an A. You were right on that. It's like, what was it? I wouldn't have been able to pull that. Oof. All the names in the world.
Every once in a while, it slides in there. Such a good movie. And Chuck Palahniuk did the book. You should read the book. And I think what you said, Matt, is actually pretty astute. The idea that it's like it's criticizing bro culture, but the bros who need to be seeing this film won't get it.
No.
It's brilliant in that way.
It's toxic masculinity and actually the absence of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Once he finds the balance at the end.
It's finding that balance, right, that he's searching for. That's why he feels out of place, because he's got these two warring sides of him and he can't find any peace. So he's constantly out of place the whole time in the movie until the end. All right. What are we at?
Your three?
My three is Unforgiven. Clint Eastwood and Morgan Freeman.
You count Morgan Freeman's part as big enough as a co-lead.
What's the big enough thing you're talking about? They go on the adventure together. He literally is there from the beginning.
Yeah, but...
All right, fine. I'll put Hackman up there. Fine.
The most...
It still works.
Yeah, but then it makes a three-person type
of
thing.
No. I could just... Because Hackman
doesn't come
Eastwood.
In until basically, you know, Morgan Freeman's almost done. Ned.
What? Hackman's in there from the beginning.
I mean, kind of.
What are you talking about? The first scene is kinda. Him. The first scene is him coming in and going after the thing. So I will say Eastwood Hackman. That works for me.
Okay.
Even if you relegate Morgan to a small
character. I just thought of it through the guise of Morgan. I'm like, I don't know. He's gone for basically the biggest scene in the movie to me.
Morgan. You mean the end?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's been killed.
Exactly. But His journey's over. I don't know what you're saying.
Look, Pitt's killed out of that last scene as well.
Last scene. Notice that specific, very specific descriptor you used there.
Well, Ned's there in the coffin.
Well, that does not count. And you think that was actually Morgan Freeman?
No, of course not.
So he was not there.
So I say Hackman. That's fine. Hackman, Eastwood. They definitely were the selling points of this movie. Villain and good guy. Essentially anti-hero, kind of. But yeah, those are the two dudes. You could definitely – that was the bill. I mean, Hackman was huge at the time. So was Eastwood with doing this thing in 92. I mean, Hackman is what, 3 years away from Hoosiers? So he is massive. People know him.
Is that all it is?
Yeah. Isn't 89? Hoosiers 89? I'm pretty sure Hoosiers – or maybe it's 86. Is it 86?
86, 87.
You're right. I'm sorry, 86.
I was going to say, it's like, wow, 3 years, because I had known Hackman for a long time, I felt, like, by the time Unforgiven came out. I don't know. He is.
Yeah, to me, French Connection, all that stuff.
Yeah, but it's an Eastwood film, and these other guys are playing two big parts in it, but it's an Eastwood film.
No. No.
Okay.
Because they're both – because, I mean, at the beginning, it's Hackman showing up when those cowboys cut that woman up, and then he's the one beating up Richard Harris. See, all his scenes don't have to do with Eastwood until Eastwood shows up in that town. That's not an hour into the movie. So, like, Hackman is having his own narrative, his own journey here, trying to build that house, dealing with his dudes in the town.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I just never – I've always viewed it as an Eastwood movie because it's him as
– Of course. He wrote and directed.
Won
the Oscar.
Acted lead. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's always been like a – now, this was always his baby. This wasn't a double build to me.
But without Hackman, there is no – that film doesn't work. He's such a
great – Of course it doesn't.
Such a great villain as Little Bill. So, I mean, I'm just saying.
You're right. So, you're right. You're not wrong.
1992 Best Picture.
Telling you how my loopy brain works.
Hey, man, I respect it.
So
– I love the movie. It still holds up. Still. What do we put? Number one or number two on our greatest westerns ever that we've done?
It's one. It's always one, right? Yeah. It's always one.
It's ironic, too, because it's right at the dying last breaths of westerns was Unforgiven.
But it's the deconstruction. It's everything. Mm-hmm. It's everything.
Yeah, it really is.
Here's all the myths that you always believed altruistically of, hey, you know, if there were some gunslingers out there dealing justice, and be like, if you deal in death, sometimes you're in the right, sometimes you're in the wrong.
Right, exactly.
So
that's why I love that ending when the writer asks him and he says, how did you go about killing who in order? And he was – because what's that all about? He goes, well, the experienced gunman who walks in and he's like, is that right? I didn't even think about it, to be honest. I always just had luck killing people.
Oh, yeah. That's what he just said. I got lucky on this guy and this guy.
Yeah. And then you're like, oh, because to me, that's his shot at critics.
Okay.
That's his shot at anybody who is like thinking they know how to do something when they've never done it. Right? I think that's all because he makes him a writer, makes him piss his pants the second he's confronted with a gun. Saul Rubinick is the actor who plays that part. And you have him do – and when he confronts him at the end, he's essentially, I think, shitting on movie critics or critics of anything. Because like, he's like, oh, no, I've read here that you need to do this. You need to do that. You're supposed to do this. He's like – I didn't do any of that bullshit. I just went in and figured it just instinct and boom.
And luck.
And luck. Right. Exactly. He's very clear about that, which people talk about all the time. Directors always mention happy accidents. All right. What's your number two?
Two is probably not on your list. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Oh, my God. All right. No, I didn't take it away. It's a good choice. Connery is massive at this time.
And he is double bill.
He is. On the heels of Untouchables.
I was waiting with bated breath when this came out because I already loved Indiana Jones.
Sure.
But the lead up to it was like him plus Sean Connery, mind, little kid, blown. And it was, man. I love this movie. I've loved it since the first day. Oh, yeah. It's the best. Let's get back to the Middle East. Let's get back to...
Give me the Templars. The Knights of the Templars.
Give me everything that I enjoyed about the first one. The second one, you know, it's got its moments. But it also has got its misses.
Really big misses.
But I can still watch it. I just don't enjoy it as much. So I don't watch it as often.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But every once in a while, it's just like, I've seen the others a lot. Let me watch Temple of Doom again.
Yeah.
And then... you know, cleanses that palate, and then go right back to, you know what I really want to watch is, you know, Last Crusade again. It's just the perfect tete-a-tete between the two of them. The father-son dynamic and the maturation of both within basically the expression and growth of their love between the two characters.
Yeah.
Started out and it was still one versus two. And it was always, you know, from a position of dominance, unless it's just because of circumstances, the way things are supposed to have been, I guess, or at least perceived. And eventually it became an even ground between the two of them, where they could probably speak truth to one another.
Right.
And say what needed to be said. It was really, I mean, just to have that counterpart It makes me wish then he had more of that in the first one, even though he kind of does, but it's more indie solo.
Yeah.
This is my favorite of the indie series. I mean, it's such a neck and neck. I know you're the other side.
I am.
Raiders is, and there's nothing wrong with that choice.
Right. No, I only because they kind of undercut Denholm Elliott's character, that guy, their friend, the British dude who's like the...
Oh, make him an idiot?
Yeah, they make him an idiot when he's not an idiot in the first movie. So it makes no sense to make him an idiot in the third one. I get it's for comic relief, of course.
Is.
And of course, you can fall back on this idea that's based on those old school serials that had people act foolishly at certain moments. I get that. But for me, you know, Raiders is a more complete film. Although you could argue Raiders as well, which we did, I think, when we talk about it. And I certainly do it on the Cinephiles, this idea that Raiders kind of undercuts Marion Ravenwood as well. You present her as this hard-drinking, punching, take-no-crap kind of woman, and then you turn her into a damsel in distress for the second half of the movie. It's super frustrating to watch now in 2019 eyes because you're like, no, she could have had way more to do with what was happening rather than stumbling into situations and falling down pits and put on the white dress, all that kind of crap. Yeah. And they didn't remedy it in Crystal Skull either. So,
No, not at all. But I don't really count that movie.
Yeah, nobody should.
So
I don't care. Let me ask you something, man. I want to ask you an honest question. Do you get – and then maybe I shouldn't, but I get super frustrated when I see these articles from sites where people are defending terrible movies. And they go, oh, no, this is not as bad as you think it was. And it's like, I get that you're getting – is it for clicks? Is that what it's all about? People trying to defend the Crystal Skull and say,
but it could be one person in their office
or Star Trek
or wherever they are, or at their house or whatnot, genuinely believes this. And they're just calling out, hoping that more people are in agreement. That's all it is. It's fucking, you're throwing out life preservers, hoping that you're not the only one marooned out here. The internet
it just
can
frustrates me
slowly bring you together.
Because now, according to just about every site that's ever existed that talks about movies, there is at least one article about one movie that everybody universally hated, but there's some writer defending it. So then there's no way to quantify a terrible movie that is universally
Because nothing's going to be universally hated or loved. Nothing.
Yes, that's a fair point.
Nothing.
What about music? There's a terrible artist, isn't there?
Doesn't matter. Nothing is universally loved or hated. Like I've said to you before, somebody out there, and I'm guessing there are a lot of somebodies, hated Mother Teresa. Hated her. A slumlord in Calcutta thought that woman was the devil and was messing up
Who
all
does
his...
Who does she think she is?
Exactly. There were probably numerous slumlords and businesses in those slums and whatnot
That's fair.
That she helped put the kibosh on.
That's fair.
And those guys were like, fuck you, Teresa.
Mata.
Exactly.
Fuck you, Mata.
Oh, you're a saint. You didn't know her. All right?
You didn't
I did.
Know her.
You had no idea. Saint my ass.
You don't always like to deal with her.
Exactly. Somebody hated Mother Teresa.
That's fair. That's
and
fair.
And by all accounts, all she did was help poor, destitute.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all she did. Let's give them a certain level of quality of life that we take for granted.
So you're telling me there's someone out there who will defend Russell Crowe singing in Les Miserables, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Wow.
Because they like that off, you can tell it's a man. You know what I mean? He doesn't often sing, but he's moved to song. Like, you can justify it however you want to.
I'm okay with things being subjective. I've been one of the biggest trumpeters of that. But I also think there's things that can be universally hated and felt like, and you can feel, that are not good. And when I see these sites that try to defend, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is not as bad as you think it is. Vanilla Ice's song is not as bad as you think it is. And I'm saying,
I
want to bang my head to a wall.
I loved it at the time. And I loved the movie at the time.
Yeah.
But it was at the time.
All right. So someone's going to defend Ishtar. Someone's going to defend Heaven's Gate.
100%. 100%. Doesn't matter what it is. People defend Plan 9. People defend The Room.
Oh, right. True. The Room. People do defend The Room.
Yeah.
Scott Manzel was on Movie Talk this morning, and he was defending the second Fantastic Beasts movie, and I didn't know that a person existed who liked that film.
After the turd that was the first one, I fell asleep watching the second one on the plane.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it's what you're supposed to do because it's boring and it's terrible.
It was. I didn't care about the first one. Oh, no.
The second one's terrible.
First one's got flaws galore for me.
Sure. Flaws, yeah.
Yeah, but it's
charming. The love story is charming between Queenie and...
But his friend and the other woman, they were way better. They had way more chemistry.
Absolutely agree.
They were the best part of the movie.
Absolutely agree.
And it was the tiniest part.
Yeah.
The whole newspaper angle, no payoff.
Yeah.
No payoff.
Oh, that's a fair point.
Nothing. It goes nowhere. So why even bring it up? It has no point in the story. Doesn't move any storyline along. Doesn't flesh out any characters. It's just dumb.
Yeah.
It's like that over and over. And you see these fucking mystical beasts, and you're like, yeah, but I don't care. That's the problem. This is Harry Potter.
I don't want to find them.
I want to enjoy
these
this
fantastic
because
beasts.
Everything else in this world I have enjoyed.
Yeah.
Either a decent amount to whatever the earlier versions, mm-hmm. like what is it, Philosopher's Stone, the first one?
Yes. Or Sorcerer's Stone, depending
on Sorcerer's Stone.
Which
whatever it
is. What a continent you are when you get the book.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. I get it. I see why it's a kid's movie. And when and as it grows and the themes become more mature, it's like, this is really good.
Yeah.
Even Fantastic Beasts came out. It's like, nope.
All right. What was your number two? Which is what?
Last Crusade. Indiana Jones and Last Crusade.
All right. My number two is Heat.
Now, how is this is an ensemble to me.
What?
Because of Val Kilmer. De Niro spends more time
if
as
Morgan
a binary star.
Morgan Freeman is not part of the conversation. De Niro is Kilmer. Kilmer's not even.
Okay, but they only intertwine twice.
Right, but they're the people. They're above the headline. Heat, it's De Niro, Pacino. Okay.
They are double. You're right.
It ain't Kilmer up there.
You're right. I was just thinking of it like actually on screen.
Oh.
It's two dudes coming in, and everybody else is. They're maybe an ensemble like Ford versus Ferrari.
Right.
But
oh yeah, who's there might be somebody there.
Oh, you got Barenthal. I know he's in it.
I don't think he counts.
Well, he's playing Lee Iacocca. This is interesting.
That's an interesting choice.
I don't remember Lee Iacocca like this.
Angry
I only know him as an old man. So I don't know 60s Iacocca or 50s, whatever, but I think the 60s is
You're right. Josh Lucas, John Barenthal, these are not names that go above the title necessarily. So.
No, so these are just whereas you got Val Kilmer, you got
let me see the Heat.
Yeah, Henry Rollins. It's always above the bill. nobody. John Voight, but not in this movie.
No.
Yeah.
I think he's on the poster.
He is. Kilmer's on the poster.
Kilmer's on the poster.
And he's third biggest. He's got a prominent. It's not like Sizemore's got a huge placement.
Yeah, see, there it is.
Yeah.
So. Way at the bottom is Kilmer.
Okay.
But is that
triple
the bottom?
Build? It's triple build.
It's not even triple build.
There's
right
three
the
billings. That's three billings.
Right there.
That's
top.
Three. Look at that.
That's
notice top. You can't even crop out Val Kilmer. Third billing right there.
You could.
That's three. You can. You can plus size that. Sure. You can cheat.
But he's like down there at the bottom.
That's a triple bill. Yes. But three names and three names alone are listed on the front of this poster.
Where was he at the time? I don't think he was a name at the time in terms
okay,
of
well,
like,
now it's you justifying. It's literally.
Well, of course. We all have to justify our decisions.
I mean, the show is called Double Build.
They were both double billed. It's eaten. It's no one's going, oh, I got to go see Kilmer in this movie.
I don't care.
People are going,
that's a triple billing. That is a triple billing.
No way. No way.
Find me another movie poster of any of the movies that we discuss where they list three names on the front.
What are the other ones you've had?
King's Speech, Nice Guys, Dumb and Dumber, Midnight Run, Fight Club, Once Upon a Time, Planes, Trains.
Well, Midnight Run is like, I take heat if you get to get Midnight Run because nobody knew Charles Grodin for fuck's sake other than just a guest on a show. No one's running out seeing Charles Grodin movies.
Well, that's also much lower on my list.
Now who's rationalizing?
No. And two, on the front of Midnight Run, it is De Niro and it's Charles Grodin and it's their names. And that's it.
It's because no one else is in the movie.
Yaphet Kotto.
You're not putting Yaphet Kotto or Joey Pants on the front of the movie, on the Farina. You're not putting, they're all character actors.
I don't care. It doesn't matter. That just happens to be what this movie, story is. There's only two real characters, and they are double billed on the movie poster as opposed to triple billed with a third actor.
Mm-hmm. So you're trying to tell me Heat doesn't qualify in your mind? Heat. It's not a De Niro Pacino film. You think it's a De Niro Pacino Kilmer film? You really do in your mind?
Under the definition, I didn't write any of my
I'm asking
list.
You a question.
In my side list of potentials that I sent you, Heat is not listed.
I know it's not listed.
I already
That's
had this conversation
mistake.
In my head. Go ahead.
You think it's De Niro Pacino and Kilmer movie? You don't think it's a De Niro Pacino movie?
I think I thought of it as all three of them going into it. I genuinely did. Because I was excited for Val Kilmer because ever since Real Genius, I've always had a soft spot in my heart for Val Kilmer.
That's a personal thing.
It is, but I've always liked him because of that. Mm-hmm. Real Genius is just classic to me. Mm-hmm. Top Secret is fine. Like, it's not my cup of tea.
I got to see where Kilmer was ex. I don't think he was selling movies anymore.
Probably not. He was after Batman, and it was after more than likely The Saint.
The Saints. I've got a special place in my heart for The Saint
see?
For whatever reason.
Look at that. Coming back around to my side of the argument. That's copyright top 10.
Jeez, I forget he was the voice of Kit in the reboot of Knight Rider.
Wow.
Gotta make that money, I guess.
I don't remember that at all.
Gotta make that money.
Never saw it. I value my time.
What year is Heat again? 96 or 95? Heat is 95.
Okay.
So, yeah, right. Batman Forever's that year. So, all right. All right.
He's selling tickets, babies.
I will absolutely acquiesce on Heat. So I have to replace it.
Yeah, whatever you want.
All right. How about Dark Knight? Ledger? Bale?
Okay.
My other option is When Harry Met Sally.
Those you do have like two faces in it just as much on some level as by the end is Joker.
Eckhart? No one's going to see that film for Eckhart.
Although that's a little stretch. He's not in it as much, but he does have – they're not going to see it for Eckhart. You're right.
Or When Harry Met Sally. Those are my other two options.
When Harry Met Sally, I think I wrote it down on my side list. I may not
– Did you?
I didn't even consider Dark
Knight. Oh, no. I'm a call an audible.
It's your list?
I'm a call an audible.
You go ahead and do that.
I'm going to put Point Break at number two. That's Keanu Reeves. That's Patrick Swayze's son.
Yeah.
No one's going to see that for Gary Busey.
Nobody went to see it.
What are you talking about? It was a big hit. Point Break.
After the fact.
Oh, you're insane. I lived through it.
So did I.
You were in your diapers.
What are you talking about? What did they come out, 1994?
No, it came out in 89 or 88.
Look it up. That's a 90s movie. That is a 90s movie. There's no way that came out in the 80s.
Man. 91. Barely.
Doesn't matter.
You were like two. How old are you in 91?
90s movie.
How old are you in 91?
91, I was...
You still went under Roos?
13. Well, 12 going on 13.
All right, 12, 13 going on 30. No one's going to see it for Lori Petty or Gary Busey or John C. McGinley. And this movie made money.
What was his box office?
Hold on, let's take a look.
And then I'd like you to adjust that for inflation so I can have an understanding of what 1991 dollars look like in 2019.
$83.5 million. It made $83.5 million.
Adjusted for inflation?
Oh, do you know they spent $105 on the remake? What the fuck?
Well, because they thought
that makes no sense.
I didn't watch that because everybody said it was just trash.
It was trash. Where is it? The budget of $24 million, it made $83 million. Three times its budget. Almost four times its budget. Got to give props.
Is that adjusted for inflation or is that in 1991 dollars?
It doesn't matter. If the budget's $24 million in 1991 and the profit is $83 million in 1991, it still counts as three times the budget.
True, but it would – now to be kind of where you think of maybe making another one, it needs to clear a certain benchmark. Like we put in X and it cleared $125 million.
Well, that's what I'm saying. $24 million, it still counts because it's the same number in the same year.
Yeah. It's double bill. You're good to go. I'm not fighting you on it. It's a great call.
$24 million in 1991 is worth today. What is it? No, $24 million. Can you do that?
Did you go to that one site that won't let you put in millions that you went to the last time you tried to do it?
It's $45 million in today's dollars.
Okay, so it went up.
That's how much the budget was. So it made $83 million, which means $155. $155 million.
For 40? Yeah.
Not too bad.
Yeah, it's not too bad.
Almost four times his budget.
Yeah, but it's not great.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's not. I mean,
for a film like that, I think you're happy as shit that it made that much.
Yeah, but great would be what John Wick does, and it does that in the opening weekend.
Sure.
Not 150, but like 100, 120.
I don't know if a Wick film has ever opened. Oh, the last one opened pretty big. Fair point. Either way, Point Break, Keanu Reeves, Patrick Swayze.
Great choice.
Swayze at the apex, Reeve at the apex, or about to become into his apex. So Speed is about 3 years away, 4 years away. But he's off Bill and Ted. He's off these other things. He's playing this character, and people loved both these dudes. People love this movie. I can't believe I'm putting it above All the President's Men. There's a bit of shame there, but I had a two-slot to slide in.
Yeah.
So Point Break's in there. What can I tell you? That's how the show works sometimes, folks. It slides in there. But I enjoy the movie. Love the movie. Come back to it all the time. It's a lot of fun. And, yes, there are cheesy moments. Not going to deny. But it's still a damn good movie. All right. What's your number one?
Number one is Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid.
Wow.
Because as soon as we said this, that was the first movie that jumped to mind.
Okay.
Like, this was number – I mean, boom. We called Double Bill and we're like, well, that was – honestly, that was kind of my introduction to two actors being able to do that.
Okay.
When I saw that. But I mean, it had been out for a long time before I saw that.
Right.
It's not often, though, when you see two wildly successful and famous actors willing to just – share a movie together.
Yeah.
Try and actually make an interesting piece of art between the two of them as opposed to making it about me. Still making good art.
Yeah.
But me.
Absolutely. Very funny film. Well directed. And, of course, A Western that was, what do they call that? A neo-Western? You know, it's like, it's more.
Yeah. It doesn't follow the same exact tropes.
Exactly. And it's aware of itself, mm-hmm. right? It's anachronistic at times. With some
the,
of the
raindrops
jokes.
Keep falling on my head sequence.
Right, right.
That just seems so foreign in a Western.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why is, okay, yeah, but there would be regular everyday life where you would have these, you know,
right.
moments of joy.
And those Westerns from that time purposely tried to undercut all, because that's an institution. The 70s were about undercutting, destroying, exposing the institutions, making fun of the institutions, thumbing your nose at the institutions. The institutions of the West, of the Western, throughout the 70s were undercut and made fun of, and you had some interest, like McCabe and Mrs. Miller is an interesting Western for that time. And certainly Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, same thing. Like in the Westerns of the past, you always had these, like, you know, moments where you looked at each other. But this is two dudes who are just flying by the seat of their pants, escaping into these situations, and then like having an actual rapport with each other that is very sweet mm-hmm. and connectable and relatable, and you like that.
So much so that you want to believe they managed to get through the end.
In the Bolivia, yeah.
Even though you know there's no way that anybody's going to make it out. But on yeah. some level, you're like, I don't know. I saw him jump into a river. You know, they've done crazier things.
What are you kidding? What do you mean? The fall will probably kill you.
Yeah, the Hole in the Wall gang.
Mm-hmm. Great name.
Great name. And to see like the desolate area that they go out into.
Yeah.
Is that in the Sonoran Desert where they do that? I can't remember.
I'll leave it up to you, man.
It's in the know. You know, the Southwest there. It's mm-hmm. one of the main, you know, more desolate deserts, and that's saying something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to try and strand so lawmen wouldn't make it all the way out because they don't know where the water sources are and whatnot. So if they didn't bring enough provisions, they could easily die out here. You're like, that's a hell of a place to go and, you know, call home.
Yeah, fair point.
To lay your head and to make those people likable.
Yeah.
But, you know, with pulp novels and whatnot at the time, they were kind of likable, like mm-hmm. Billy the Kid. People were fascinated by
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. Billy Kidd was great.
But when you watch
such a great character, rather,
yeah.
in history. Yeah,
yeah, the Brad Pitt, Casey Affleck. Why am I blanking?
Oh, yeah, Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, yeah.
To see what that's like, to be that incredibly famous at mm-hmm. that time, where Casey grew up like, hey, yeah. we are the same. Like,
yeah.
Same number of letters in our name.
It's such a great point. And you're just like watching the film and you're like squirming in your chair for Casey Affleck. Because you're like, you're so desperate to be relevant.
How can you not? You've read stories and tales. Yeah. This is one of the few like truly pop culture individuals.
Right, right.
And he's in your house. Yeah. You did grow up. It's like us with you know, athletes or whatever the case was when yeah. you were kids. Michael Jordan was larger than life.
Yeah, true.
And if one day Michael Jordan was like, hey, we're going to go rob a bank. And I'm like, let's do this.
Yeah, but are you going to be – I have a lot of my same number of letters in my last name as
I
you
mean,
do.
Depending on what age I was at, I would have been
fair.
More – I would have been more
totally
like –
totally fair.
Do you remember in game four of this playoff series when you shot this for this and went to this and then you made that one pass? And that pass would be almost like crazy. I would be going off about that. He'd just be like, uh-huh, yeah.
He'd make you shine his shoes in front of him.
Yeah.
Jordan's that kind of guy.
I'd do it.
Fair enough.
Depending on what age, man. No problem. What do you need? What do you need? Hey, my drink could use a little freshening up. Not a problem,
not
sir.
A problem, not a problem.
I got a towel over
you're
my
like
shoulder.
Spider. You're like Spider in a good
film. Yeah.
What do you need? What do you need? You need a sandwich? I'll make a sandwich.
But nobody's ever shot at my feet. That's the beauty.
That's true. Nobody would. Which is a good thing. That's number one?
That's my number one. What's your one?
Shawshank Redemption.
See, that's another one to me where it's so singularly Tim Robbins. Because like all the vast momentum of the movie is his journey. There are other characters that come up, like obviously Red, and then the one kid that gets gunned down.
Tommy,
thank you.
You're an insane
person.
And
Brooks. But to me, it's like it's – the movie itself is Tim Robbins' movie.
Yeah. I'm sorry about your brain and that it thinks this way about the movie. The movie is about Red and Andy and their relationship. Without Red – Andy does not reach salvation.
True.
That's throughout the whole movie. But, and then when Andy leaves, we still have shots of Red in the prison by himself with the crew.
But we live, yes, because we do have shots of, but the story now has progressed to what Andy's doing.
No, it's what Red too. When he goes and does the when he does the parole board shit, that's Red's story.
True, but from Red's perspective, his story does not actually show up until he walks onto that beach and Andy is there.
What? His story is from the beginning as soon as Andy walks up and talks to him.
I'm saying from his perspective because his life has been Red's. His life has been on hold, so the story of his life is nothing. It's meaningless details, and it begins when he meets Andy at the end, and that's when his story begins.
I disagree. I think 1,000%.
I'm not saying in the context – I'm saying from the perspective of the character.
Yeah. Saying I disagree. He's built himself a fiefdom in essence at that place, a black man at that time in that prison – he is the guy you go to get stuff.
Okay.
He's made himself essentially top dog in that prison, not by running a gang or doing anything like that. He's the guy who can get things. And Morgan Freeman brings a certain kind of stature, nobility to that character, so everybody defers to him. Even Andy defers to him. And he even bets on Andy, who is a submissive at the start of this movie, that he's going to crack first. And Red narrates the movie. Red narrates the movie. That immediately eliminates him as being inconsequential or his story not starting.
I'm not saying, but he is narrating Andy's life.
And his.
Kind of. Oh to God. Me, it's more it's about Andy. Like, so you're saying he's the guy that can get things. We don't watch him go through the getting, but we do see what those goods bring to life over here.
But Andy is changing him.
Kind of. Yeah, yes. Yes, fully, but
Both changing each other.
We don't see that shift as much as we do in Andy. I think it's so much more focused on him.
I can't disagree with you more. I think you see him changing throughout. And, you know, because Andy pushes him. When Andy goes and talks to Clancy Brown on the roof and just stands right behind him to talk to him about, and Clancy grabs him and dangles him off the edge, Red tries to stop him. And that's the thing. Red has constructed this world. He understands how to function within this world. He's a king of the world in this world. Andy comes in and fucks everything up. But by the same token, Red also gets Andy to find his way back to being human again.
Okay.
And all of – so their journey. So and then we follow Red when he leaves the prison and what he goes through and the Brooks stuff and all that kind of jazz. So everything is – Red's story is just as important as Andy's.
But to me, when you're talking about going through in the Brooks stuff
– about redemption.
To me, that's just him describing pulling pages off a calendar. He's not living –
where? In the prison?
No. Like when he's talking about like the Brooks getting out and him going to the parole board and whatnot.
He's not experiencing his life.
He is experiencing his life, but he's not alive. So I don't know.
Yeah, and he's not alive until he gets to Mexico either.
He shows more sparks by like locking the door and turning on the music so everybody can escape this prison and hear this songbird.
You're saying he's willing to push the boundaries of the situation.
But also it's still trying like last gasp for life and we're following all the...
That's fair, but you also – but what does Andy say when he walks up to near the – what, three quarters away in the film? He says, I got to get busy living or get busy dying.
Let's do this. I heard it.
He says, I got to get busy living or get busy dying. And there's a reason because he feels like he's stuck. So that's what I'm saying. All right. Anyway, there you go. There's our separate top 10 lists. I acquiesced on one, so be it. But I'm pretty proud of the list I created. And now we'll combine this list, right?
Correct.
Oh, well, no, wait. We should read our lists, right? Because usually the graphic comes up, right? We did in the old days, or did we?
We did, but we won't have the graphic live in studio.
Eventually, we will have the graphic. We'll line these things up where the graphic comes up on the studio as we're talking about it. I'm hoping.
I doubt that will ever come to pass.
Well, if we send our list ahead of time, then it'll come up.
You forgot we were recording today.
Yeah, because it wasn't on the calendar. Now that it's on the calendar.
True. But we had been building up to this. All right, on Wednesdays, we're going to do this. We only got 1 week into it, and you forgot.
Well, because I also got sent to Australia starting next week. So
true.
It threw my whole brain off.
You had distraction.
Yeah.
But literally 20 minutes before I left and ran and got a Clif Bar, we were having the discussion of what today's show was going to be.
True.
So you had it in your head.
Right.
But anyway, it doesn't really matter. Neither here nor there.
We're going to get it.
I would imagine most people are going to side with you about Shawshank, and I'm going to lose that argument. I'm fine with that.
That's all right.
I could be singularly – or singular, rather.
Are you going to – right? All right.
That's fine.
I'm going to get the bongos. I'm
going to get the bongos. All right. So 1 through 10, writing it down. People on video can see it. There we go. There's our 10 numbers. We got them all written out. There are a lot of choices. So for those out there listening, why didn't you have X and Y? It's the same as last week. It's hard to say what is a correct list on this because it's such a broad, great topic.
Subjective,
but so broad.
Subjective.
It's what do you want?
Yeah.
All right, so Mm-hmm. Butch Cassidy and Sundance, you had where?
I had it at 4.
So I think that's our 1-4. There's nothing beats that.
Okay. I got to tighten these bongos up. They're a little loose. A little loose. A little loose, a little loose.
And then.
Okay.
Your 1 I don't have, your 2 I don't have.
Right.
We have Fight Club where? Fight Club?
5.
Okay. That's 3-5.
Okay. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is 7.
Okay. So 5-7.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it, isn't it?
Do you have
All the President's Men?
All the President's Men. Now it's number 6.
So that's 4-6. So I think Fight Club, All the Presidents, and then your number 1, and okay. maybe Once Upon a Time.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Where are we at now?
That. What's your 1 again? It's
Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
I think that's all our commonality.
Where are we at?
Number 6.
Okay.
What's your next highest?
Okay.
I don't have my 2. You don't have your 2.
Oh, yeah. What's your 2?
Last Crusade.
Yeah, put it on first over my 2 because Point Break is shouldn't, you know. Although I do love the film. I think people love the film.
No, it's a good one.
Yeah.
For this list, it suits it well.
Squeezy.
Definitely. Okay. You're next after that?
Unforgiven at number 3.
Okay. Unforgiven it is. Next.
Butch Cassidy at 4. Fight Club at 5.
Got that.
All the President's Men at 6.
Got that.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at 7.
Got that.
8, American Gangster.
Okay, so my 6 and 7 are not on this list.
Put it on. Is that 9 and 10?
That is 9 and 10.
All right, let's make it happen. That's how the list happens, folks. We are fair. We'll fight. We'll battle. Teeth and we'll throw coins. But at the end, we'll come up with a top 10. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right. The top 10 movies. Okay. The top 10 double bill movies. Yeah. At number 10.
Midnight Run.
At number 9.
Dumb and Dumber.
At number 8.
Unforgiven.
At number 7.
Point Break.
At number 6.
Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade.
At number 5.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
At number 4.
The Shawshank Redemption.
At number 3.
All the President's Men.
At number 2.
Fight Club.
And our number 1 double bill movie is
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Raindrops keep falling on my head. BJ Thomas, ladies and gentlemen. BJ Thomas. All right, well, there you go. That's our top 10 list for the double bill movies. Matt, good list, I think.
Great list.
Yeah,
and
great
once again,
list.
Like we said, there's tons of different choices. And to those that watched us at patreon.com/the top 10, thank you so much. All of this is thanks to you and for you. Mm-hmm. So we appreciate it. And for those watching on the once it comes out on Collider, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. We appreciate it. And if you want to listen on our feed, you can still find it there on audio and also on the Collider Live feed.
Yes, the Collider Live podcast feed, yes.
So, yeah, it comes out there the same day it does on our feed on mm-hmm. Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. It's just the video that's a week later.
That's right.
We're doing all this for the video, so we hope you enjoy. And once again, that's patreon.com/the top 10 with the number 10. Please join us over there. We give you all kinds of different stuff. We try and do give back as much as we say we do mm-hmm. and a little bit extra. So follow me online at Matt Knost, MattKnost.
Matt, will you tell them the Facebook groups?
Facebook.com/groups/the top 10 show with the number 10.
Yeah, go and join that group because a lot of the fans come up with questions and top 10s and battles and all that kind of stuff. A lot of fun, the Facebook group. Very lively Facebook group. If you haven't joined the top 10 Facebook group, go do that. A lot of conversations you get into about films. We enjoy watching it from afar, sometimes participating every once in a while. As Matt Fellow said, follow him at Matt Knows. Follow me at The Roka Says on Twitter and on Instagram. And thanks so much, everybody, for watching us or for listening to us. And we'll see you next time with another episode of The Top 10 Show.
Napa Know-How.
At Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, get a $25 prepaid Visa card when you get any Napa Automotive battery. It's the best deal for some of the best batteries from some of the best car people around. But we might be a little partial. Anywho, pick up any Napa Automotive battery and save $25. Do it yourself or have it done for you. That's Napa Know-How.
Napa Know-How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores and Napa Auto Care centers, while supplies last, offer ends 8/31/20.
It's that little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide, and I'm here to tell you about my new podcast, from negative to positive. Brought to you by my friends over at State Farm. I believe that to have success, you got to play the game so that the game doesn't play you. You know, the biggest risk you take is not taking one. It's very important that you make sure that you make the most out of your money, especially when it comes to insurance. State Farm offers surprisingly great rates. They have great agents standing by helping you personalize your coverage. All this is backed up by award-winning, easy-to-use technology. It's a great price with an even greater service. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.